respond as previously, but in a totally different way. So I hope it, well, I hope I won't confuse you too much. So it's this work is a collaboration between different people from Saclay, which is close to Paris. This is the French neutron facility. So you probably know some of them, especially Isabelle Mirbeau and Pierre Bonville. And as I said, a collaboration with the Institut Néel in Grenoble. So with Elsa Lotel and Julien Robert, Elsa so presented this fragmentation work this morning, and Julien, so you have heard about him for this ytterbium titanate work. And our samples were grown by Claudia De Corse and Monica Chomaga at NEAN, coming from the University of Orsay and from the Department of Physics in the Warwick University. So I'm afraid I'm a little bit too long, so before Michel stops me, then this is the main two messages of this talk. The first one is that in this sample, in this praseodymium sample, the role of the transverse interaction is probably very high, very strong. So where is the Canadian pointer? So yeah, this term, I will mostly focus on that one, but this one may be also important, but okay, we had no time to discuss it. If you remember Jeff's talk, these pseudospins here represent the quadrupoles because of the praseodymium nature, non-Cramer's nature of the praseodymium atom. And the second point I would like to make is that the disorder is probably very important in this sample. And maybe, well, I've wrote this, I put it this way, quantum spin ice root. What I mean is that the disorder may probably promote, in some sense, well, disorder the whole thing, but keep some correlations or nearest neighbor correlations. So this material has been studied by different groups, by Matsui Rad in 2010, presented in HFM. Then you have seen this paper in the previous talks by Kimura et al. The group in Saclay also worked on it. And well, I won't see, this is the paper by the group of Colin Broholm that appeared recently. So I won't, and also here a paper about the crystal growth. So I won't enter into these, I won't discuss this much. What I want to say is that first, the praseodymium compound is a pyrochlore magnet, that's okay. The praseodymium 3 plus is a non-Cramer's ion, very important, because of this physics of quadrupoles. It's not ordered. The ground state, the crystal field ground state is a doublet, which is well protected from the first excited states. So we can use quite safely this spin half, pseudo spin half representation. And as you can see from the inverse susceptibility, the interactions are likely anti-ferromagnetic. But that's not that clear because of this downturn here at low temperature. And as was said, I think, yesterday morning, the crystal growth of these samples is quite an issue. Well, for example, the heat treatment are necessary to get to the correct oxidation number, yielding this nice blue, green color of the samples. So then I continue my description of these most important results. So the specific heat here as a function of temperature shows a peak at about 2K, which is followed at lower temperature by an upturn, which is like probably due to the hyperfine interaction. And the second important result is that from neutron scattering, in this paper by Kimura, we can observe a very broad Lorentzian shape of the spin dynamics. And quite interestingly, this Lorentzian shape has a peculiar Q dependence, which is like this, so which resembles the spin ice pattern, not completely because the pinch points are not that well observed. And as you can see by comparing this picture and this one, the scattering is mostly inelastic. You see this is the red color, 0.55 in the arbitrary units, compared to the elastic one, which is very weak. So about 10% of the whole response and 90% of the response. So in this landscape, I would like to show you our results. So first, the magnetization, which was measured as a function of a field for the three directions 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, and 1, 0, 0. So what we get is quite strange in some sense, because on the one hand, we have the normal order. I mean that the value of the moment at high field is the smallest for 1 1 for 1 1 0 and then 1 1 1 1 0 0 as in a spinize. But what is quite strange is that the magnetization has struggles to grow. So it's as if something was fighting against the magnetization. In a standard spinize, we would expect something completely not completely, but significantly distinct, with a very steep increase of the magnetization. So to further understand that, we performed a neutron diffraction with the field applied along 1 minus 1, 0, so in first, and we determined the structure, so the field-induced structure. So it was performed on D23 at the ILL. So this is a picture of what we get. So basically, the field is applied along this direction, okay, 1 minus 1, 0. And what we get is that these two moments here are basically zero, and so very simple structure. And the two spins which are magnetized are these two ones. So, and if we do that for different fields, we get this curve here. Beta moments are zero. The alpha ones, the red ones here, struggle to grow. And this is in quite good agreement with the magnetization. So in some sense, the same pictures. When we apply the field along 1, 1, 1, it's again the same, something similar. The M1 and M2 spins are different because they don't experience the same field, same effective field. This one sees the whole field. These three guys see a field slightly different. But again, you see that M2 is larger than M1, and everything looks like if it was very difficult to reach the saturation. So something fights against the magnetization. And to go further, we carried out inelastic neutron scattering. And at this point, we find similar results to the one published by Kimura. So let me explain. So first, at zero field, this is the red curve here. So this is the neutron intensity as a function of energy. So we get this Lorentzian shape. And when we apply the field, this Lorentzian shape, the maximum of the Lorentzian shape moves to the higher field. And if I fit the maximum, I get this curve here. So that's the first result. But basically, at zero field, when we do a map in Q space, we find the same results as Kimura. I mean, with arms along the 1 1 1 and equivalent directions, as in which resembles the spinize. Then on the field, it's a little bit different. So this concerns these measurements at higher field. So you see, as you can see here, so we destroy in some sense the spinize-like pattern, and at low energy at least, which consists now in a single arm along the L axis, okay? And but that's not the whole story. So at low energy, then when I increase the energy, you see that the intensity is smaller. I just stop here by saying that this is in agreement with the very recent results published in 2017 by Colin Broholm, or Venn et al, I think. So, but that's not the whole story. If you go to further energy, there is another mode. And this mode is corresponds to the maximum here. But this mode is featureless. I mean, it's flat and has no specific feature in Q space. So you see a quite complicated picture of the spin dynamics under field. And now the point is to try to understand that, or to interpret these results. So our analysis is based on the one that Jeff showed us yesterday. And what I would like to do is to convince you that the relevant parameters for this praseodymium system are in this region of the phase diagram, of the mean field phase diagram. So we just took this Hamiltonian, computed the mean field k equal to zero phases, and we end up with this. So this phase diagram as a function of gzz and g plus minus shows four different phases. The simplest one is the all-in-all-out. This is the ordered spinize at this level of approximation, and shows two quadrupolar phases, quadrupolar phases, in terms of physical quantities, but in terms of pseudo-spins, these two phases which would correspond here to the gamma 5, psi 2 and psi 3 that we saw this morning, and this would correspond to the Palmer and Choco states. Again, this is the pseudo-spin, so nothing to do with the real spin. In terms of physics, this corresponds to quadrupolar orderings. So maybe yeah, we can see the phase diagram in another plot as a function of g plus minus and g plus minus. And so you recognize the ordered spinice, the quadrupolar phase which we are interested in, and the pseudo Palmer and Shocker. And this phase diagram, by the way, looks very similar to the work that was published by Sungbin Lee a few years ago, although she used by far more sophisticated treatment than the one I'm showing you here. So what I'm going to do now is to calculate the spin dynamics in this region of the phase diagram and compare it with the experiment. So if I do that, I'll just show you one example that I pick out in the red part of the phase diagram. What we get is that the spin dynamics, or the pseudo-spin spin dynamics, consist of a flat mode here that I labeled by A and some dispersive feature. And interestingly, this flat mode here, if I look at its Q dependence, so it shows exactly, precisely, the spinice structure factor. So you see the step-by-step, the correspondence with experiment. Just to answer a question that was asked this morning, because in some sense this has something to do with the neodymium zirconium zirconate that we discussed this morning. This was a question by Bruce, I think. In the pseudo-spin space, the pseudo-spin is ordered along the, let's say, gamma 5, and the pseudo-spin rotates. Okay, the spin waves corresponds to rotation, classical rotation of the pseudo-spin. But what we see here is only the projection of the pseudo-spin along the Z magnetic axis. So this this is the red arrows here, okay? And these arrows, they have the two-in, two-out nature. And this is because of that that we see the spinice-like pattern, okay? So, and this flat mode with this peculiar structure factor exists in this whole red part of the phase diagram. Then I look at what is happening under field, and under field, of course, well, as you can see here for different fields, first, the dispersive feature changes. It goes down to lower energy. And from the flat mode here, a new mode detaches that goes to higher energy with increasing fields. And what is interesting is that if I take a cut at low energy, then the structure factor will look like this. So you see there is a close correspondence with the experimental data, and still we have at zero field the correspondence between experiment and calculation. So you see that with these elements, we have a kind of a good confidence that in this red region of the phase diagram, we have some similarities between experiment and calculations. Yes, so I will skip that part because I'm afraid I don't have enough time. Then to try to refine the parameters, because the question is where is praseodymium zirconium in this phase diagram? So we fitted a number of different physical quantities, like the energy of the flat mode, like the specific heat, the field dependence of the new flat of the new mode at a higher field, etc. So finally, we end up with this proposal. So J plus minus between 0.7 and 0.8 K. But we have less precision on the values of GZZ, so ending with this region of the phase diagram. Okay. So, but that's nice, but in some sense you could say, okay, this is mean field, and at the mean field level we have a long-range ordered quadrupolar phase, so it's not what the system says. It's not ordered, no long-range order. So we have probably to add a new ingredient, or new, not new, but and this ingredient is the disorder. It was already discussed this morning, but in any case, it's quite well known that non-Cramer's ions are very sensitive to disorder, because they are, the degeneracy of the ground field doublet can be very easily lifted by small perturbations. So by the way, it's an idea that is in the literature for a quite long time by these different people. Okay. So to show you that disorder is indeed an important feature, let me show you a map of the diffuse scattering that was carried out on D7 at the ILL of our sample, praseodymium sample, this one, the green one here. So this is in the scattering plane, HH000L, and what you see here is basically the Bragg peaks. But as you can see, these Bragg peaks are quite strange. Some of them are nearly round, as we expect, and some others are elongated, like that one, also this one. So, and if we do that at low temperature, I mean 60 mK, and then we do it again at 1K, 10K, so it's always the same. And what is also important is that this is a polarized neutron scattering, so, and this is the lattice part of the diffuse scattering, so not magnetic, purely lattice origin. So it does not depend on temperature, and the lattice origin is attested by the fact that it is a polarized neutron. So this is the sign, or in some sense the demonstration, that there are defects in the sample. I would say intrinsic defects, because, well, to the best we can do, well, the sample is a paraclore one, well described by the diffraction and the FD minus 3M space group, etc. So if we make a zoom of this, on this Bragg peaks position, then we can analyze the scattering and analyze it in terms of what is called the long scattering. So this is a good way to characterize, in some sense, the strains that are present in the material. And these strains would correspond to point defects in the material. And these point defects create a strain that distorts slightly the material. And the distribution of this strain would be described by this function, and this function, modeled by this function. And this function has an important term here, which is gamma. And this gamma characterizes, in some sense, the distribution of these strains. So, okay, it's a little bit complicated, maybe. But what is important is that if now we consider the magnetoelastic interaction, I mean the coupling between the strains and the deformation induced on the electronic density that we described here in terms of quadrupoles, then this complicated Hamiltonian can be projected onto the pseudo-spin half, and we end up with a very simple expression. So this is the macroscopic one, and this is the effective one. So you see that the strains here, they are replaced. The random strains are replaced by a new field that I call V. Okay, the quadrupoles, if you remember the talk of Jeff, they correspond to sigma plus and sigma minus of the pseudospin. So in some sense, we now have an additional term in the full Hamiltonian, which is nothing but a transverse random field that acts on sigma plus and sigma minus. What is important is that the random V field has some characteristics. It's a centered random variable, but is described by a width that I call delta V. And if I try to estimate this delta V, you see that it's quite strong. It's a few K. So the disorder is quite large, and a few K, it means that this is comparable to the parameters I extracted from the analysis of the neutron scattering. You remember G plus minus was about 0.7, and GZZ was about minus 0.5. So it's the same order of magnitude. So what I mean is that in this system, we have to deal with two ingredients which have about the same order of magnitude, the standard Hamiltonian that was discussed before, plus the random field. So, okay. And what is the effect of this random field? The effect is quite simple. We can imagine it. If we start from a long-range order, for example, the all-in, all-out gamma 5 long-range order, if I add some disorder, then progressively, with increasing disorder, this phase will be destroyed. And this is the case here. I show you, as a function of delta V, the gamma 5 moment, quadrupolar moment, which simply is reduced and goes to zero at some point. But at the same time, that's not the whole story. At the same time, okay, the long-range order is destroyed, but there are still some correlations. What I mean is that the system is disordered because of the random field, but on local scale, it's still correlated, as you can see here, from the correlation function. So to do that, I made a... It's again mean field, that's the only thing I can do here. That's but in a real space, so okay, I took a number of unit cells, quite a long, well, it makes a quite big number of praseodymium ions, and you just calculate self-consistently, as in a normal mean field calculation, the ground state. Okay, so for these parameters about delta V between 1 and 2, which I think are relevant, we have no long-range order, but still something which is correlated. And now, of course, I try to compare with experiments. So, sorry, yeah. To give you a simple picture of this regime, you can think that the ground doublet is now split in two doublets, and because of disorder, and as was said during the talk of Teril, I think, and these two doublets are separated by a quantity which is nothing but the disorder. They have a special distribution function between, this is a random field, so you have doublets separated by, let's say, a few millivolts, some of them by a smaller one, etc. Okay, so we just take it, but as I said, excuse me, these two new states, these doublets are still correlated, they are not independent, they are correlated by J plus minus and GZZ. And now we have to compare two experiments. So first, this is the specific heat. So you see that, so this is the data by Kimura, and this is the calculation by Pierre Bonville. And so what you see is that we also have the peak of the specific heat at about 2K, and we have here the upturn at lower energy, at lower temperature, sorry, which corresponds to the which is described by the hyperfine interaction. But here it's not in our picture, the peak in the specific heat is not due to spin ice at all, but it's simply due to the distribution of Schottky anomalies that corresponds to these two levels. We can also compare with the neutron scattering. So this is the neutron intensity as a function of energy for different temperatures, but it's not, well, so similar to the plot I showed you by Kimura. So let's look at the blue curve, the one taken at the lowest temperature we have, 1.5K here. So you see it's broad, but the broadening of this line is, in our picture, simply explained by the fact that we have a number of doublets that are randomly distributed, and the broadness of this signal is simply due to the fact that we have different magnetic transitions from this state to this one. Okay, so those two states are not magnetic, by the way, but the transition is magnetic. Okay, I think it's... To finish, I would like to show you the spin dynamics, because you remember I showed you that this is important. I showed you basically this picture, which we have at a small disorder. You remember, maybe it was this one here, okay, that we had in zero field. So now I add the disorder progressively, step by step, describing this curve, so starting from here, almost undisordered, etc., until this regime. And you see that the signal is blurred more and more by disorder. And of course, when the disorder is too large, then we have something that has no feature. And even maybe more interesting, if I just look at the Q dependence, the Q map of this line here, flat line that I discussed before, or here, etc., this is what we get. So you recognize the spin ice pattern, inelastic spin ice pattern from no disorder. And when I add disorder, then step by step, the pinch points are completely blurred. And in some sense, for the relevant parameters, like that one, for example, we have, I believe, a quite nice comparison between calculation and experiment. So what's the message of this presentation? So twofold. First, we have a transverse interaction. Well, this is our point. Positive J plus minus, which allows to understand or describe the inelastic neutron scattering results, but also the field evolution of the specific heat. And the second point is the role of disorder. I've tried to show you that it stabilizes disordered phase, of course. It destroys the long-range order of the mean field theory, but still promotes a correlated state with a correlation between nearest neighbor quadrupoles. It is based on this, first on the polarized neutron scattering I showed you that demonstrate the existence of these defects, and it's based on this comparison with experiments, the absence of long-range order, the peak at 2K in the CP, and the broad blurred spinized pattern in the inelastic scattering. And this is what we have to keep in mind. The parameters, the J's, are probably, likely, this is our point, of the same order of magnitude as the disorder. And so with this, I would like to thank my colleagues from ILL and from the CEACRG at ILL, the people who helped us in the cryogenics, very important in this field. All these low temperature stuff are quite complicated, and I would like to thank you all for your attention.
Okay, so I anticipate lots of questions, so maybe make the questions brief and the answer as brief as possible, too, please.
Yes.
Well, it's not one.
Okay. So first one is actually I didn't understand how are you, identify the parameters. You told us that you took the positive chip plus minus. Mm-hmm. But what was wrong with the negative sign?
With the On the other side, I couldn't get this flat mode. Yeah, this, well, on this, on the in the red side, I get a spin dynamics which look like this with the flat mode, which has this spectral
wave. If I understand correctly, according to the Kimura-Eder's neutron scattering experiment, actually it has a broad, energy spectrum.
Yes.
So why do you say that it's a
Because in the first part of this talk, I just considered no disorder, so everything is, this is a spin wave, so they have infinite lifetime, so everything is very narrow in spin energy. And then the second part, I included a disorder, which of course blurs and enlarges the different modes.
I see. So in that sense, it might be possible that the sign might be opposite.
I did not understand.
I mean, actually, when you take a J plus minus negative,
yes,
then actually it's much easier to have a spinning grid.
You mean this? Okay, this point here is further than this one. Yes.
So, I didn't understand what was
wrong. I guess the question is that in the first part you didn't have any disorder, you have your data and you fit them with the no disorder model, and your conclusion is that in that phase, I guess Chigig is asking how does that contrast with previous reports, which puts on the other side.
Yes, but what I mean is that here the spinize is elastic. So to get it in the inelastic channel, we need to go to this phase. Otherwise, it is elastic, so like a standard spinite, so no problem with that. But to get it in elastic, we need to shift, to consider just J plus minus positive and finite.
Yes. You have shown the magnetization result at 19 VK, and in Kimura's good sample, actually, it shows the metamagnetic transition at the field around 111. And do you expect the metamagnetic transition in your quadrupole scenario?
Yes. Because,
I think that means
the metamagnetic feature,
yeah. That corresponds to the 3 in 2 out, to 3 in 1 out. In
spin
scenarios,
but it's
quite natural.
It's spin
scenario.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. You expect such things. The reason is that the different spins for example, in this direction, they do not have the same moment because they do not see the same field. So as a function of field, then you may have not exactly the same behavior for the two spins. It would be the same for this direction. These two here won't have the same behavior of this as these two. So you expect, with increasing field, you expect different behaviors.
The point, right, is that this metamagnetic feature for the 111 field, you could intuitively understand it as a local phenomenon, right? And so if they observe it in a given material, in a given sample, perhaps you could have seen it as well, right? I mean, that's the...
You mean a kind of plateau, or maybe?
Well, inflection point, right?
You can imagine in the curve, it's very broad, but...
Maybe this is what you mean here. It's a little bit too flat here.
It's very bold.
It'd be sample-dependent, because in a strong disorder vision.
Yeah, it is.
Bruce, so this, this distribution of splittings, you would expect to see this at other doublets as well, right? Not just the lowest energy doublet. So yes. Do you see it in other
materials, you mean?
No, in other higher energy doublets.
The
10 millivolts, we did not look at this, but probably it exists also.
Yeah, because it would apply to all of them, I think.
Yes.
Okay. Very short question. Did you say what the origin of the disorder was? You talked about strain.
That's a
maybe it's not
well. To be honest, from the diffuse scattering only, it's not precise enough to say which mechanism is responsible for. So, at a given point, I imagine that it could be exchange of two stuffing, exchange of praseodymium and zirconate. But at the same time, we have to imagine that's to maintain the neutrality. We have to imagine that the oxygen also move. So, I have to discuss with a solid-state chemist to be to be sure.
Okay, so I think, Jeff, very quickly.
Is there any idea on the length of, is there a correlation length of these strains on what scale, length scale, do you
I think that from the diffuse scattering data, I think we can extract some lengths, but I'm not sure. Probably the physics is even more complicated. What I mean is that I considered a disorder which is not site-dependent. I mean, there are no correlations between two sites, but physically, this is a little bit doubtful. I think that, should start with something.
Okay, so let's thank Sylvain for a very interesting talk.